Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, we have 5 days left to turn in our mail-in ballot or vote the old-fashioned way. Despite ballots being sent out a month in advance and offering conditional same-day registration on Election Day, there are a wide range of factors why someone shows up to take part in the electoral process while others just sit it out. Our first guest will argue the simplified explanation of apathy isn't only inaccurate, but is ultimately harmful to voter engagement. Mindy Romero is a professor and director of the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy, a nonpartisan research center focused on elections, voting behaviors, and political participation. Mindy's one of our go-tos to understand the barriers and the factors that lead to voter turnout that is really far from reflective of California's diversity, with the goal of creating opportunities to close that historical gap so that elections are representative of all of those who are impacted by policy. Mindy, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me again, and in person.
Yes, in person. It's nice to see your face. Shaping up to be a normal midterm for you, or is there kind of like a big headline as we head into November 8th?
Well, these days, what is normal, right?
Exactly.
Especially in elections. I think in terms of turnout, we're thinking that it's going to be a good year again for turnout. Might not match or meet 2018's numbers, but you know, we've been generally on an upswing on turnout. The thing is we don't have a competitive gubernatorial race, by all accounts. And that's a big driver in a midterm year in California. We have fewer propositions on the ballot, and most of them seem to be not competitive. Prop 1, of course, being the noteworthy exclusion there in terms of amount of support, at least.
That's about abortion.
Yes, thank you. Abortion rights, the constitutional amendment. As it comes down, the midterms for most people are about the battle for control over Congress. And we often don't think of California as kind of being consequential because we think of, the presidential race and we're blue state. But when it comes to the battle for control of Congress, we've got about 10 somewhat at least competitive districts. So the battle comes right through our state. We've got at least six that are very competitive, right through the Central Valley and parts of Southern California. And so we will play a role on the national level. We play all local races, make a difference, matter. But I think there is a concern that at a state and local level, there's not a lot of drivers other than congressional districts that are getting kind of that attention and resources and time. And
you had said what is and isn't happening motivates voters to show up or to not show up, so that can be very different depending if you're in the Central Valley in a very competitive congressional race or if you're not, and if you are more likely to get calls and political ads, campaign ads, or if you're not really hearing from everyone.
Well, and let's be honest too, so there's a huge segment of the potential voting electorate that gets nothing. And we have a lot of survey data over the years to say even registered voters, but if they come from historically underrepresented groups, they don't kind of meet the likely voter model for campaigns. Mm-hmm. Even in registered, they'll be less likely to get all of those flyers that many of your listeners are probably sick of getting, and calls and ads. So there is certainly an information gap in elections, period. And it varies by race, ethnicity, income, age. And then you, on top of that, put a whole bunch of essentially non-competitive. Now, every vote matters. Every race is important. Everyone should pay attention to every race, of course, and be informed on their vote. But the reality is when a race is considered to be not competitive, people will vote the party line or sometimes feel like they don't have to vote. Well, they always vote the party line, almost always these days. But they'll feel like it's not as relevant for them, and that can affect turnout and overall engagement in the election, and quite frankly, it can affect the long term of how people feel in terms of just whether they think elections are salient. We already have a crisis in many ways of so many people, even regular voters, feeling disconnected from the political process.
Yeah, and even aside from candidates, I mean, when talking about propositions or local measures that people will be voting on, it may be the first time that they're learning about it when they open up, their textbook of a ballot, and then they start informing themselves. That can be such an overwhelming process when you have so many other things going on in your life. And it's kind of, but it is also, on the other hand, surprising given that we get these things like a month in advance, the voter information guide, especially for statewide propositions. What do you think are the biggest barriers that gets people from, actually opening it up, giving themselves enough time to inform themselves, to actually doing it, you know, maybe the day of or the night of, and then just kind of being overwhelmed by the process.
Yeah, a lot of voters are overwhelmed, especially if you're not a regular voter. If you're a new voter, if you're a young person, first or second time you're voting, there's just kind of the nuts and bolts that people still, a lot of people don't feel completely comfortable with. And even though they get that voter guide, you know, they still need support. They need to know where to independently get information on candidates so they feel comfortable and informed. They need kind of, especially young people, need kind of greater support in terms of kind of walking them through the electoral process. That's the reason why some voters, young people, don't participate, because they don't, you know, trust that or feel comfortable. So it's, and the reality of people's lives these days, especially if you have kids and families or you're working several jobs or whatever it might be. And if you think that already you're on the fence about whether an election matters, you know, are you going to put that work in? So maybe it's going to take more work for you to get that information because you're not getting that outreach from campaigns. You have to kind of make sense of all of it. You don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to, you know, do something that might be hurtful for your community. Some voters sit it out because of that. So it's a there's an information gap. There's an outreach gap. There's a lot of good work by, we should note, here in Sacramento as well, by community groups that try to fill those gaps, but they're fighting an uphill battle in terms of resources. So just to remember that, you know, we have some of the lowest turnout rates amongst established democracies in the world. Even when it's a good year for turnout for us, it's bad compared to everybody else. There's real reasons for these disparities, these lower turnout rates and disparities. And understanding kind of how the system disadvantages many voter groups from participating when it might seem like to some people who are diehard voters, like what's so hard? It is hard. And we know that there's a big difference in how people are kind of integrated or not integrated into the electoral system.
Yeah, when talking about, you know, the fact that voters typically vote in line with their party, is there a harm of being unprepared or disengaged with issues and then just kind of voting in line with your party?
Happens all the time. So one of the biggest, probably the key predictor of how somebody's going to vote is their party affiliation. If you're Democrat or Republican, you're going to vote that way. There's just that small little independent or at least kind of swing voter that most campaigns are kind of going for. In terms of the, you know, the strength of our democracy, it's not good if I would contend if voters are not fully informed and really confident and comfortable in their vote. If they're voting the party line and they feel comfortable with that, but I think a lot of voters, you know, they vote the party line, but maybe even inside they're not quite sure if that's the right person. Maybe they think if it's a lesser of two evils, maybe they don't have enough information. They say, well, I know a little bit about this incumbent, right, because of the party or because I've seen them around and I don't know about the challenger. Or I've heard, essentially, right, as I've interpreted it, my vote doesn't matter because it's a done deal anyway and it's not a competitive race. So you have a lot of people who aren't participating, but people who are participating who aren't fully informed or at least fully engaged because of, again, the structure where we produce all of these, you know, non-competitive, essentially, right, winner-take-all races, and we have a dominant two-party system, and people, you know, again, with that outreach gap, all of it kind of comes together to kind of suppress turnout, but also in unequal ways where we see, as you mentioned at the outset, we should mention it again, it's important. We consistently, election after election, high or low turnout, doesn't matter. We have a voting electorate in every election that doesn't look like, doesn't represent the rest of the state. It's older, wealthier, whiter. Young people are underrepresented. People of color are underrepresented. And that has real consequences in terms of policy, outreach, real outcomes in communities. And I'd argue for everyone, because our elected officials need, and our policymakers need to hear from the full slate of those that they serve.
You know, I think about earlier this week, we were talking about, I was talking with two moderators for a debate for Congressional District 3, and just kind of the issue of getting debates to happen this midterm, especially in a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1. Do you think campaigns want a high turnout?
Campaigns want to win, period. Whatever it takes, let's be honest. There's always some good exceptions where candidates want, you know, to increase turnout in their community or representation. But overall, again, the kind of our electoral system is incentivizes candidates, right, to just get those people who are going to vote for them out to vote. And usually just the number they need, right? So it's like strategic calculation on their resources, what to spend, right, to get the number that they need to actually win. And again, that means that not everybody's getting that outreach in voter education. It's just those groups or those people that are targeted by campaigns. So, like we saw the recent gubernatorial debate.
On a Sunday afternoon on the radio.
Exactly. opposite NFL games. And, you know, I'm sure that was not by accident. You know, both candidates hopefully sincerely came to the table to inform voters. But the negotiations behind the scenes, which I wasn't privy to, certainly, though, there was calculations, right? Only one debate. It's in the best interest of the incumbent, the governor, right, for there not necessarily to be a lot of press because it's, you know, his election to potentially possibly lose, you know, if there's an awful soundbite or something like that. So, yeah, so people don't get debates as much. People don't get public dialogue and conversation or just even to connect with candidates in ways that you would hope we would see in a robust democracy.
Yeah, well, your center has a really cool tool. It's called a voting location and outreach tool. And this is really to, like, target voter outreach efforts. And you could even help organizations find the best voting locations before an election to really reach voters who are underserved or in marginalized neighborhoods. I like honed in on Sacramento County, and you could see areas where there is a higher eligible voter possibility, voter registration, but there isn't a high voter registration turnout. And then you could really, if you were an organization that really wanted to increase voter turnout and voter engagement, mm-hmm. you could hone in on these areas. What went into creating this tool? Because it's not just in California, it goes across 14 states.
Yeah. Covers over half the U.S. population. So it was an effort that we started in California, funded initially by the James Irvine Foundation. As California was in 2018 adopting the Voters' Choice Act, there was a lot of questions about how can we provide a data tool to help inform the transition from polling places to vote centers and equitable, accessible siting of those new locations, because it was a significant reduction, right, in mm-hmm. the number of actual physical sites. And then the tool evolved. So it still provides, through a modeling, suggested accessible, equitable sites for any jurisdiction. You can look, and the model will suggest a rethinking of maybe the distribution of sites, right, that better matches the voter history and demographics of a community and vote-by-mail use rates and all those sorts of things. We've really expanded all of the data that goes into the modeling. It's also available as individual layers that are mapped. So right now you can go to California, to Sacramento. You'll see dozens of voter history and demographic data mapped down to the census tract. So you can look at Sacramento County and you can see population distribution, young, you know, of youth, of Latinos, of those who have limited English proficiency or those with disabilities, whatever population you're interested in. And you can see voter turnout over the last couple of elections. You can see the high and low turnout in a community. And as you mentioned, you can also see the eligible but not registered rates across mm-hmm. communities, and you can use that for targeting. I welcome anyone who just wants to see more. It can be just even if you don't use it for outreach, I think it can be really enlightening to see the disparities. You know, we often see maybe one county turnout rate, but it varies significantly across our county and all counties in our state to understand, again, that story of voice and have the disparities across communities in terms of their say, right, in our political process. But you also can target it for nonpartisan outreach efforts and hopefully increase turnout in any way that makes sense for you as a user.
You know, I think about how in terms of voter engagement, whether people show up, you know, that phrase like representation matters. And you've talked about how women of color are underrepresented in local government and that women of color, particularly Black women, tend to have less access to financial support. You know, what are the consequences of that long term?
Huge. So, you know, your first off is just the immediate representation of women of color on things like, you know, boards of supervisors or city councils or school boards. But in the long term, it can also, or maybe even not so long term, it can affect potentially turnout rates. So people, again, looking for people that represent them, have similar life experiences. You know, if I see somebody that looks like me and I think has similar values and maybe kind of understands the world and I, you know, think I can trust them a little bit more, I might be more likely to vote. And also there's the pipeline. So here at a local level, people who start off at a city council or maybe a school board or another commission or something of that, but if it's elected, that pipeline really matters, right, for representation at the assembly, at the Senate, at the state level, at the national level, potentially. And women of color have fewer resources, fewer networks that give them financial support, but also just generally support, right, other types of resources and encouragement. And then we have larger societal expectations that are placed on women of color and women, period, when it comes to whether they should be out participating in the election world versus, you know, taking care of home or their community, right? So there's lots of barriers, and it we see it in reality when we see underrepresentation. And we need to support women as much as possible, women of color as much as possible, because of that pipeline impact, at least in that sense.
Yeah, I've heard just with local races in the city of Sacramento that, you know, just the challenge of balancing childcare with running a campaign to run as an elected official, and that may kind of resort in some instances of, as you say, like self-selecting out of the process because it's just too difficult and you don't have those resources and support.
Yeah, and that's an important point. So often women will self-select out. So people will maybe look from the outside and say, oh, well, things have changed, right? A woman can win an election just as a man can win an election. But a lot of women will select out because they know they can't, or they worry they can't win because they don't have the resources, the money, the connections, or also because of those other societal kind of pushes and pulls. And so we don't really have a full or fair kind of slate to be looking at to understand kind of all those barriers to women. Just if you just look at the women that are in play, that are part of the electoral process, that are running, that doesn't give you the full story of the barriers that are at play for women just considering possibly running.
Yeah. I want to end on a very important voting group that doesn't show up as much, and that's the youth vote, younger people. You obviously are located, you talk to a lot of college students. Your center is connected to USC. You've also held a TEDx talk on the power of the youth vote. And you tweeted just like recently that apathy is a blame narrative. Unpack that. What does that mean when it comes to the youth vote?
Thank you. So, you know, when we talk about the youth vote, usually there's acknowledgement, right, that younger people, of course, vote in much lower numbers. They do vote, but they vote in much lower numbers or rates than older voters. And the first thing, almost always, the first explanation for that is, like, people will say, you know, oh, young people don't care. They're apathetic. What's wrong with this generation? And sometimes that transfers even to, well, you know, if they don't care, that's a good thing they're not voting then. I don't want them to make decisions for me or my pocketbook or whatever it might be. But really, that kind of what I call a blame narrative, all it really does is serve to justify not supporting young people, right, in ways that they need to be supported to increase their turnout. So I mentioned outreach earlier. Well, young people consistently, again, even registered to vote, right, young people who are registered, will report not getting campaign materials, calls, again, all those things that we often find annoying. It's really important for especially a first-time voter, right, to bring them into the electoral process, to ask them to vote. Campaigns and candidates often don't talk about issues that are specific to young people, or at least talk in ways that, you know, that connect to young people. And so a young person doesn't feel part of the political process, doesn't hear issues they care about. And then as they've grown up, we have a pretty abysmal civics education in the U.S., lots of wonderful exceptions, but overall, they're not taught the how, you know, what and why voting's important, why of voting. And so we don't support them in that. They turn 18 and we expect them to magically both know how to vote and want to vote and feel like it's important. And then we put them out there and then they don't hear issues. Campaigns aren't courting them or talking to them. And then they don't participate in high numbers. And then what do? We blame them for it. So it's really important that we support our young people, hopefully systemically, so they turn 18 and they have that support they need. But really, if we want to end on a positive note, everyone listening today, right, can play a role. We know peer-to-peer contact is the most powerful. So if you're a young person, reach out to your other young people. Don't blame your friends and fellow students for not participating.
Or judge them.
Don't judge them because, you know,
they can be counterproductive.
Yeah, that's counterproductive. And again, that's kind of the blame suppression kind of narrative, right? So anyway, we can all reach out, encourage young people, ask them for the support they need. What is that support? And most importantly, make the case for voting, at least increase their chances of voting. Maybe even bring a young person with us, you know, to vote or help them vote by mail. So it's a societal issue and it's a societal responsibility. And the numbers don't lie in terms of the level of support that young people. And what I do know is, and I'm sure many people that are listening today know, that young people are really engaged in a lot of civic and political issues. They just don't see why voting is an actionable step on something they care about. They need support in making the case for voting. Mm-hmm.
Mindy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's always a fun and interesting conversation. Mindy is a professor and director of the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy, discussing voting behaviors in the days leading up to the midterm. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.